Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Hello and welcome to Mainstream by Pixel Sift. My name is Gianni DiGiovanni. I'm the executive producer of Pixel Sift. And joining me for the first time ever on a Pixel Sift podcast is Adam Christo. Good morning to you.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm going really well. We're going to talk about some video games today because you might know Pixel Sift because we love indie games. We love sharing the creativity, hearing those stories about people who make games. But we're big players of games ourselves on Mainstream. We like to talk about the games that we've been playing recently. Most of them are going to be AAA and other games that we've been reading about in the news. But first up, can you tell me, what have you been checking out recently? What are we going to have a chat to you about today?
Oh, we're going to be digging into The Outer Worlds. So it's a game that I kind of prepped a review for and have played maybe twice now. I've kind of gone through it complete with one character, and then I've played about like a quarter of the game with a completely different build and another character as well. So I feel like
you've got a good taste of it.
A lot of time into this game. Yeah.
And I've been playing it was controversial to start with, but quite clearly was a huge hit, Pokemon Shield on the Nintendo Switch. So we'll be talking all about that as well. Let's jump in.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Australia's best video game podcast.
Subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever podcasts are found.
All right, tell me a little bit about The Outer Worlds, because I am a big fan of Obsidian, loved Fallout New Vegas, and all the work that they've done before that. To me, it kind of felt like it kind of came out of nowhere in a way. All of a sudden, it was here. And then you've been playing it quite considerably, and you've got some thoughts about it. What do you reckon? Tell us about it. Set it up, for people who maybe have never heard of the game as well.
Yeah, so The Outer Worlds is a brand new game from Obsidian Entertainment, long-running RPG studio, have been behind some really great franchises, the Pillars of Eternity series, which I really love and have about 400 hours in, which is very kind of sad to admit. But they're known for great story craft, creating interesting RPG worlds, and just really good world building as well. So that was what drew me into this game particularly. It is a science fiction game. It's kind of like a Gilded Era science fiction. It's got a bit of a Wild West energy about it. It feels like Firefly was a big influence on this world, and it's a new IP from them as well. So there was a lot of expectations going in, and a lot of people were kind of calling it a spiritual successor to Fallout New Vegas as well. So I think a lot of people were looking for that sort of gameplay that you would expect from a Fallout game or an early Bethesda game that focused on storytelling, narrative choices, and lots of different builds that you can kind of take your character in to kind of experience a story. So that was, I guess, the main setup for The Outer Worlds.
People say it's a spiritual successor to the Fallout games, but it really does look like it's been Fallout reskinned. A lot of the major things in Fallout have basically been switched out wholesale for things you might recognize. Would you agree with that?
I feel like it's not really a Fallout game at all. Me, it feels more like it sits into the mold of the first Mass Effect game. Mm. You know, it's not a big giant sandbox world. You're not going to get dumped into a giant map where you can kind of wander off and see a whole bunch of NPCs that are kind of running on scripts as though they work on a 24-hour clock. It doesn't feel like it has a lot of that emergent gameplay that things like Skyrim and Fallout 3 were kind of built around. Mm. It's more like, here is a hub, there will be some spoke side quests, and you will kind of go to this point, and that point, then you will fly off and you'll go to the next. So it reminds me a lot of Mass Effect 1 in the way that it kind of had a couple of central areas and lots of different side quests and different planets you could kind of jump from as well. So it's interesting, but Fallout was really not the takeaway that I got from it at the end of the gameplay experience. I kind of felt myself thinking of a different series of games from kind of the early 2000s and late 2010s.
So what was it about this game that, I guess, where did you kind of land on it? And when you were, you've played quite a bit of it now, how did you kind of sit after playing it? Are you going to continue playing on?
Well, I've kind of finished it now, so I think I'm kind of going to put it down for a while. I'm interested to see if there'll be some story DLC that might make me come back to it and play it again. But I think my first opening hours with this game were super positive. Like, it was a very nostalgic feeling about like, oh, cool, I've got a ship. I can walk around it. I can talk to my companions. I'm getting to know these people. I'm going to give them skills. It had that fun of Fallout New Vegas where, you know, you really have some interesting perks that you can pick. You have some interesting skills. I started building a character based around leadership conversations, which I like, and decided to move away from all the combat abilities and instead rely on my companions. So I liked all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, you sit, it's the sort of game where you walk into a town, there's lots of people to talk to, and you start to get a real feel of unpicking and unpacking the stories there. And all of that felt great. It felt very familiar as well. It's kind of like having a nice bath, you're really comfortable, you kind of want to stay in there. But after a while, it gets pretty lukewarm, and then you're like, I want to leave. And so that's kind of where I started to go as I kept playing more. I started to feel like I'd seen this game before. I'd seen what these sorts of games tend to offer you, like multiple times as well. And I was, by the end of it, I was really craving for something more, something to kind of push that envelope a little bit further, both in a storytelling sense, but also in just a gameplay and just everything sense. The combat is also super forgettable in my mind, like nothing to write home about. There's a slow-mo effect that you can use, bullet time for shooting, but like, I feel like this is not a game you go into for a great combat experience.
I mean, the recent Fallout games, probably the same criticism can kind of be leveled against them. They aren't super good in terms of actually that sort of gunplay thing, and that's one of the complaints that people have sort of leveled at the series, that it's a pretty good RPG, but not a very good shooter.
Yeah, and like, I think the thing with Obsidian is when I go into their games, I really expect the storytelling to take me to places. And, you know, I want to find like an angle, and I want to kind of chip away at it, and I want to like pull on a string and see where it's going to lead me in terms of like a narrative thread. Maybe I'm talking to an NPC and I really want to unpack this part of the world or this what this quest is working on. But with this game, I felt like it's kind of short, it's simple. The tone is very much kind of tongue-in-cheek. It feels like everyone is like a character. It feels very Futurama-y and kind of built around jokes. So it's hard to take a lot of the stories in this game kind of seriously or with gravity. And after playing a game like Disco Elysium, which is another recent CRPG that was so built around like deep, expansive storytelling and conversations and narrative, it just felt like it fell flat. And maybe it's because I played those games so close next to each other that I was a little bit let down by the story.
All right. So tell me, who do you think this game is actually for? Who's going to get a kick out of this, even if it's just for a short time?
Well, I definitely got some sort of kick out of it. I mean, I was compelled to kind of finish it. And there was that feeling where I was like, cool, I feel like I'm playing like an early Mass Effect game. And there's a lot of fun about that. The companions in this game are really good as well. So there are things that you can grab onto. And I feel like if you are a fan of that sort of like early 2010s kind of storytelling RPG, whether it's a Mass Effect or a Fallout New Vegas, you will grab things from this game. I just feel like, you know, be aware that there is like a level of depth that this game hits, and it's kind of a bit more shallow than you think it would be.
But I guess the some of the sting of a purchase of this game might be taken away because it is available 100% as part of the Game Pass subscription for Xbox, which means if you already have that and you want to just kind of dip your toes into it, then it's probably a pretty easy thing to just chuck a couple of hours at and have some fun.
Yeah, which is why I kind of had a good time with this, because I've been playing it through Games Pass and it feels like the perfect price point for this sort of game. You know, it's about 25, 30 hours. It finishes sort of abruptly in my mind as well. Like, I felt like the ending of this game kind of came quite quickly, and I felt like there was more story here that never really resolved itself. So, you know, for the price that I paid it at, it was pretty satisfying.
Perfect. All right. Well, let's jump into the next game that we're going to talk about, which is Pokemon Shield.
This is Mainstream by Pixelsift.
So I've been playing Pokemon Shield, a game that was kind of, well, we talked about this on the main Pixelsift series in episode 135 with Matt Trobbiani. If you want to listen to that, there was a bit of controversy when this game kind of came out. A lot of the really hardcore Pokemon fans were not super happy with some of the decisions that Game Freak had made, but I am actually really, really loving it. I think it is as someone who's sort of played every single Pokemon game that's come out, I wouldn't consider myself someone who is super hardcore into it, but a very sort of passionate player of these series of games. I think they've just taken a lot of the really core elements of the Pokemon franchise, and they've really honed them, and they've done some really creative and clever things to push everything forward for the Nintendo Switch, and it's been a really supremely enjoyable experience so far.
Yeah, I'm playing this as well, and I'm having a bit of a blast at the moment. It's a big nostalgia hit for me. I haven't played a Pokemon game since Blue, so
oh wow,
it's fun to kind of be like, what is it, nature? Like, what is that?
I know.
There's lots of mechanics that I'm Googling as I play.
Oh, there's so much in it now. And a lot of things, one of the criticisms that was kind of leveled at is that some of these mechanics that have been introduced in previous generations, things like natures and stuff, have continued through. But other things have sort of been, you know, dropped off for this particular series. And part of that is, I guess, because the game has become quite complex. And if you're talking about people who are going to be playing this game, maybe for the first time, a lot of people have picked up a Switch and they haven't played games for a long time. In the same way, I guess the Wii had this same sort of effect. People kind of picked up a Wii who normally wouldn't be playing it. So they've really trimmed down a lot of stuff. They've trimmed down the Pokedex as well, which I am like totally fine with because there are way too many Pokemon and lots of them are bad. And you just collect them just for the sake of collecting them, but they're never actually anything you're actually going to be interested in. And it kind of feels a bit like a greatest hits sort of album in terms of the Pokemon they have selected. You know, there's some of your real favorites from the original series from Pokemon Blue. You can get Charizard in it, but surprisingly you can't get things like Bulbasaur or Squirtle. Just for whatever reason. So the way that they've kind of picked it seems a little bit strange, but what I think, what a greater potential for this game that none of the other games really have had is it feels like an extremely good framework which they could go and build upon as well. So say, for example, these things where they're saying, well, maybe the Pokedex is limited. There's no reason why they couldn't introduce a DLC which brought another 150 Pokemon into this game. And
yeah, I was thinking about that myself like today. This is almost like a games as a service game that gets released and then, you know, Pokemon in general, and then just never has any updates.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a new game in 2 years. But why not start doing incremental updates?
Yeah, exactly. They totally could bring more of these games in. They can patch in stuff, and they have done it for, you know, other games as well. There's never been really super big story DLC for the Pokemon series. But it means it's something they could really kind of expand on and they can fix. And they sold, I mean, it sold 6 million copies in the first week, which is the highest selling game in the first week of Nintendo Switch and broke a lot of records for a bunch of other things as well. So it is obviously a lot of people are getting into it. And I've actually surprisingly been playing, I played Pokemon Let's Go Eevee as well, which I played a lot in handheld mode. But this one I've actually been playing a lot on the TV, which is kind of a slightly different sort of experience for me. I usually don't play very many Switch games on the TV at all, but this one I've been playing a lot. And I just think they've done some really clever things in the way that they've talked about particular little very subtle things that they've done. Like, for example, there's a ghost Pokemon which lives in a teacup or a teapot. And that particular teacup or teapot, there's like a variation that the vast majority of those teapots and teacups are actually counterfeit, but every like one in 16 will be a legitimate one. And there's a tiny little like authenticity mark on the teacup. And that's like never been, it's such a subtle thing that they've worked into this, but it just shows that like really like fine detail work that they've done on all the characters in this particular thing. It's really been super, super enjoyable.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go for it.
I want to know about your team. Tell me about your Pokemon squad. Who are the champions?
I've got a motley group of like weird fighting dudes, which I generally never ever do, but I've just kind of come across some characters that I've just stuck with. Because usually I try to balance it out. I like to have, you know, like a water, a fire, an electric, and maybe a psychic or something in there. But at the moment I've got like Sirfetch'd, which is just one of my most favorite characters in the new series. Just killing it. I've got a Pandoro, which is like a big like panda style, like almost like a sumo wrestler. I've got my grass starter. I can't even remember the name of him.
You went with Grookey.
Yeah, Grookey, whatever the new one is, man, like some gorilla one. Yep. And then I've got the electric dog, the Yamper, the little the evolved version.
I have one of those too.
They are very cute. I've got a Meowth that I got through Mystery Gift, who I basically just used to like collect free items from the world. And then I've also got that the coal Pokemon, for whatever reason. This is like this fire rock coal Pokemon that I've upgraded. Like I've leveled up to the last evolution as well, just because I needed something with fire. And I'll probably ditch him because rock and fire is not a good against anything to do with water. So yeah, it's just, it's really, really cool. I think the thing that isn't really super for me about this game is that there is still some real clunkiness to it. And yes, you can skip a lot of the tutorial in this game, but you can't skip it all. And there's some things where you just feel like, oh gosh, I've played every single game. I know how to catch a Pokemon. I know what Pokemon are. Like, I feel like the ramp up process is very, it's quite slow. But you know, once you've moved past that, that isn't really a problem. And also, I think the online stuff is very clever in that they've almost got like a semi-MMO world where you can see characters sort of running around in this wild area space where Pokemon sort of run around. And that's the dream, I think, that everyone has been hoping for in Pokemon, for this big area with wild Pokemon just running around in a big open space. It's kind of the closest thing. It's not quite Breath of the Wild open, but it's approaching that.
I'm really excited to see how they'll expand that in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. They can run themed events, and they have got like things on a schedule, so you can actually find Pokemon on like certain times. And they could, run like what they do with Pokemon Go. You know, say a week, and you can catch this particular Pokemon and do that. So that's really clever sort of stuff. But when you get booted out of the internet, when the internet disconnects, or if it doesn't work, it is like quite stark. Like the being kicked off the internet moment, like really, like it struggles with. Nintendo is not good with online stuff generally, but it just, you really feel like, oh, okay, here we go. This is just how you kind of feel that experience. I guess, who is this for? I guess if you have an interest in Pokemon, maybe a fleeting interest in it, maybe you played it when you were a kid, maybe you're coming in and you've got the Switch and it's the first one you played since Pokemon Blue, then it's a great way to get back into it. And I think it's a really cleverly done. There is a lot of heart in it. The writing is very funny in it as well. Like the characterization in the writing is quite good. It sort of seems a bit hammy at first because it's like they're really emphasizing that sort of English British sort of humor, but as Australians it's kind of almost feels like Australian dialogue in a way as well, because everyone's calling each other mate, hello, how you going there mate, and all that sort of stuff. So that's quite good. I think it's a really clever game, and I actually can't put it down at the moment. So yeah, it's something I'm enjoying a lot.
Cool.
All right, well, let's check out what's happening in the news.
Sit down for a chat with your pals in video games. This is Mainstream by Pixelsift.
All right, Adam, what have you been reading in the news? What's been catching your eye?
Look, I found a really interesting article that I found fascinating that was on Vice. And it was this profile piece about World of Warcraft. So it's called World of Warcraft Changed Video Games and Wrecked Lives, and it's by Patrick Kleppert. And it's an oral history of people's experience of playing World of Warcraft over the years in relation to, I suppose, the craze of World of Warcraft Classic launching. So World of Warcraft Classic has resulted in the biggest quarterly increase in subscription plans in WoW's history. And it was interesting to hear from a whole bunch of different stories of people who played the game in its peak or have played the game over the last few years that found their lives consumed by this game's grind. And as someone who raided in vanilla Warcraft, played a lot of World of Warcraft back in the day, I am keeping a very far distance from WoW Classic and want to stay far, far away from it because I'm a bit scared of it. So it was interesting to hear about a whole bunch of other players who have kind of gone through that similar experience of, whoa, this is just not for me now, or wow, did this consume a whole portion of my life back in my early 20s or when I was at college and I dropped out of everything. So it's kind of funny and interesting and odd, but I related to a lot of the stories there because I think myself found myself very consumed in World of Warcraft. Like, I did progression raiding back in the day as well. Wow. And I also helped four people get to Grand Marshal. So the PvP grind in original World of Warcraft was a very intense thing. Sometimes it took up to 6 to 8 months for people to get to that final rank. And the way our server worked was we would have about 8 or 9 people kind of working towards Grand Marshal at any time. They would coordinate together to ensure that their ranks were done in a certain way, that they accrued a certain amount of honor each week so that they could game the system to ensure that they could create a smooth transition of who would get Grand Marshal over a period of time each. And then there was a bunch of us helping and supporting, and we would tag in and tag out. And, you know, I was a support healer, essentially. So when the main healers of the teams had accrued enough honor for that week and needed to rest due to the rank, I would be brought in to heal the teams and squads while they ground battlegrounds over and over. And I did that for like 5-6 hours a day. It was wild. Like, I think about the amount of time I spent in that game and looking back on it at how unhealthy it was. And it's interesting to hear other people's stories about that.
Yeah, I played a lot of Warcraft as well back from vanilla. I didn't raid until Lich King. I don't have the same nostalgia for the vanilla WoW, except I feel the social experiences were actually better, but it may be just a factor of time. I think now as sort of WoW has progressed and I played up to the most, well, I played up to, you know, the not Battle for Azeroth, but the one before that. And it's a lot of that social interaction and the guild stuff, I have a real nostalgia for that connection I have with people, but I have no nostalgia and I have no actual time to think about playing that game again. And when it came out, I was just like, nah, it's not for me. And I actually think, I think gameplay wise, the game has actually improved dramatically since vanilla WoW. I think socially it's not quite the same, but yeah, I'm happy to stay away from it.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. Like, I leveled a paladin in vanilla and like level 1-60 combat was press one ability.
Yep.
Every 15 seconds, that's about it.
Yep.
And you know, when you're grinding in your 40s because there's no quests to do in vanilla Warcraft and you're just going over a circuit of yetis that respawn slowly for like 7 hours, it's like, you know, I don't know if that's the sort of gameplay that I necessarily want to get myself.
I think in those moments, that's where your guild, you'd be chatting to people about stuff. So even though you were just doing a grinding repetitive task to level up your character, those moments was where things were being built up socially. So that's what I think people kind of might have been missing from that experience, which you don't do because you level so quickly now in the mainstream World of Warcraft. So yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I played a lot of it, but I don't feel the need to play it ever again. So yeah.
Yeah, same.
So do you think you ever would try it out, or you just think, nah?
Oh, look, I just don't think WoW Classic's for me anymore. I mean, I had my time with it as well. I played a lot of it at release. I raided all the way up to Naxxramas. I got exalted with the Timbermaw rep. Like, I did it all. So to go back and do it again, it's no. Yeah, I think I'm going to stay away.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, well, look, speaking of nostalgic franchises that people are digging back into this week, Half-Life Alyx was announced with much fanfare. It's been such a long time between drinks for Half-Life series for people who've been wanting a lot from that. There's been sort of little tastes that people have seen as the sort of Portal universe has kind of been meshed in with the Half-Life universe. But for many people wanting a mainstream story-driven Half-Life game, it has literally been like, you know, since almost 10 years, more than that now, since the last chapter of Half-Life 2, Episode 2. So to see that kind of come out and to hear people sort of excited about it, it on VR, I think this is going to shift a lot of virtual reality headsets. I almost think it was just targeted at doing that, really. Like, Valve could have made a Half-Life game at any point. They had more than enough resources. I think there was probably the people willing to work on a game like that as well. I can understand having the thought around how do you live up to a series that has become so so venerated in people's minds. Like, how do you make a sequel to that? But I think they could have done it. And I really think that there's a big factor that that VR needs a killer app. And this might be the killer app that shifts a lot of units.
Yeah, look, I'm with you on that. I've been waiting for something to kind of compel me to buy some sort of VR headset for my computer. I mean, I've got one that could run VR pretty well, but I've just never gone, there's no reason for me to spend this exorbitant amount of money and actually go get one and set one up yet. So I'm excited that this might be the first time that I actually start looking for sales and considering if I ever get one and which headset do I want. Because I've been waiting for like a full-length game that really takes advantage of VR and kind of pushes things forward. And I'm hoping that this will be that game, that this will do a whole bunch of interesting things with that medium that we haven't seen before.
What I think is really one of the things that I'm actually most excited, I played a lot of Half-Life back in the day. It's one of these series I did play. I played the original I played Half-Life 2 first, actually, when the Orange Box came out on the Xbox. We played a lot of that, and that was the first sort of foot into the water with Portal as well, which was the runaway hit. And I think what is really clever and what they've done is they've got Rhys Darby in this game as well, who's Murray from Flight of the Conchords, who just is an extremely good comedic actor. And I think in the same way, I don't know if you ever played Portal 2.
I did.
Stephen Merchant in that really carried that game along. He was just a brilliant comedic actor and a hilarious character that kind of carried it right through, and I really like that type of humour, and I think Rhys Darby's in that same sort of boat, so it would be really cool to see how it sort of continues out. And yeah, I think it's just fascinating. I think we'll get more and more about this as it progresses. So
yeah, and I'm excited to see Valve do a narrative game again, because they have such great writers in their team. Portal 2 is really well written, and you know, it's nice to see that we'll be getting something that's not Dota or a card game.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll just have to see how that all rolls out, but I think there'll be dribs and drabs as we kind of progress through the year. Save your pennies now for your $1,400 VR headset. So this has been Mainstream by Pixel Sift. It's what video games the Pixel Sift team have been playing and what we've been reading online. My name is Gianni. You can find me on Twitter at @G_DI_G, or you can follow Pixel Sift. Adam, are you on Twitter? Can people find you there?
I am. You could find me at Adam Christou. Very easy to find.
Nice one. Thanks to Brian Fairbanks at Salty Dog Sounds for composing the Mainstream theme music. If you like this, you can check out our Australian podcast award-winning podcast called Pixel Sift, where we interview indie game developers and we break down some of the industry news and other topics that you might be hearing in the news with a bit further detail. We've got a website as well. You can head to that to see videos, articles, and much more on pixelsift.com.au. And if you have a moment, we need your help. This is a new podcast, but for the main Pixel Sift podcast as well, we need your ratings and reviews, and we need you to share what you've heard and tell people who might like this, because we work on word of mouth, and there's nothing better than you telling a mate that you like the show and that they should check it out. That's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much, Adam. We'll look forward to having you on another episode and talking about what games we've been playing.
My pleasure.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.